The number of data breaches worldwide rises every year, going up by 211% from 2023 to 2024, due mainly to five mega breaches. Scams, identity theft, they all start with your personal data being exposed across various websites. It's on people search sites, in data broker databases, shady directories, AI answers, and even search results. That's the part most people don't see. Their home address, phone number, email accounts, and social security number aren't just leaked. They're being actively bought and sold by bad actors. But you can protect yourself now with Incogni. Incogni tracks down and removes your personal data from multiple sites, including online directories, people search sites, and even commercial databases. The Incogni process is fully automated for hundreds of known data brokers, companies that collect and sell your data without your consent. The categories of data brokers Incogni covers include marketing, recruitment, health information, risk mitigation, financial information, and people search sites. With Incogni, you can protect your privacy in three easy steps. Remember, they can't harm you if they can't find you. So, take back your personal data with Incogni. Use code INVESTTALK to get 60% off annual plans. Go to incogni.com/investtalk. You can also find the link in the episode description.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is InvestTalk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today is Friday, December 19th, 2025. And I don't know if you know this, but I will remind you, this is the last full trading week of the year. It is crazy. There's just one more abbreviated full week in 2025. And so because of this, and we say this over and over, now is not the time to lose focus. With that in mind, our objective today is the same as each and every day: to try and help you become a better investor. We want to help you understand market dynamics and especially how they affect your portfolios. To that end, as always, we bring a mixture of educational items, of actionable material, but most importantly, you provide us with the finance and investment questions on the top of your mind. Now, this year, we did do something a bit new for you. We produced the first ever InvestTalk holiday special, and it dropped exclusively on our YouTube channel yesterday. It's fun. It's a fun end of year episode where Justin and I look back at the biggest market themes of 2025 and highlight a few lessons which will carry forward into 2026. We also selected a caller question of the year, which we discussed in depth. The InvestTalk holiday special is free to watch, so head over to YouTube and search InvestTalk with two T's or use the link in today's show notes. And while you're there, don't forget to hit subscribe and hit the bell. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down that show topics for you. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, Luke and Justin. I was interested in buying Trane Technologies, symbol TT. And I'm wondering what you guys think a good entry point would be. Thank you.
Ticker TT is Trane Technology. That is T-R-A-N-E, not T-R-A-I-N. And Trane Technology is a global industrial and climate solutions company. They're based in Ireland, and they are listed on the New York Stock Exchange. Now, taking a look at this company, right, it is a fairly large company. Year-to-date, it's up 5.55%, up 3.43% over the past 52 weeks, but down 4.12% in the past 3 months. Now, it's an $86 billion market cap company that really doesn't have that much debt, only $4.759 billion in debt as of their fiscal year end, December 2024. Revenue growth, bit moving in the positive direction since 2020 when revenue was about $12 billion, now projected to be $21.2 billion at the end of 2025. So significant improvement there. This long-term average is only 3.6%. Why? Because pre-pandemic in 2019, revenue was at $16.5 billion. But at the same time, net income growing at 13.6% on an annualized basis, which is pretty solid. Margins, great. EBITDA margin, 20.3%. Net margin, 13.1% in 2024, projected to grow to 13.8%. And return on equity, get this, 35.9% is what it was last year, taking a slight dip to 34, but still pretty reasonable. So you might be asking yourself, why is this company called Trane that is not about trains trading at 26.1 times price to forward-looking earnings, 29 times price to cash flow? Well, it's because they're commercial HVAC business. It's had some pretty strong, resilient performance. Revenue's grown from it. EPS has grown from it. And so you've seen this consistent earnings upgrades and therefore analyst upgrades as well. Now, from a strength perspective, it's been pretty weak year to date, right? It's underperforming its industry by 24.8%. And that was on the back of stellar, not just 2023 and 2024 performance, but performance going all the way back to 2019. They also benefited not just from the AI build-out, but from their climate-focused solutions segment, which has done particularly well as well. But there is a bit of risk here, right? Performance versus their peers, slowing down a bit. Valuations look a little high. They are a cyclical name as well. I think what the market is telling you with this pricing is that, well, certainly they have not broken out. There has not been some sort of catalyst that has driven performance higher, revenue growth slowing, net income growth slowing as well. So for now, I think I would keep this on my watch list, but I like the idea, I like the theme, and I certainly like the industry. That is Trane Technologies PLC, ticker TT. Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks a bit higher, ending just off of their best levels. S&P 500, NASDAQ both posted modest weekly gains, erasing some declines that we saw earlier in the week. Big tech, mostly higher, with NVIDIA being the big standout amongst that group. We also saw momentum, growth factor names, retail investor favorites, high beta names, all leading the way. Other outperformers included networking and communications, money center banks, IBs, biotech, and managed care. On the downside, though, underperformers included athletic apparel, specifically Nike, doing very poorly today, home builders, retail, chemicals, and paper and packaging names. On the bond side, treasuries a bit weaker. Yields were up anywhere from 3 to 4 basis points. Dollar index up 20. We did see some yen weakness. The big story there in FX, a somewhat less hawkish Bank of Japan rate cut than expected. Gold, though, finished up 50 basis points, and crude oil settling up 90 basis points, though still off 1.6% for the week. Overall, I mean, volumes were a bit elevated. You did have option expiration. But other than that, pretty quiet trading session. We had better AI sentiment seeming to be the go-to excuse for the strength that we saw. It did drive that big momentum outperformance that we just talked about. Also, some discussion about how markets have entered a very favorable seasonal period, the Santa Claus rally as we go towards the end of the year. On the earnings calendar, a bit of mixed takeaways. Again, Nike, the big story, hit by softer guidance. We also saw a bit of a hawkish shift in the global rate impulse. The Bank of Japan delivering on a widely expected 25 basis point tightening. On the data side, final December University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index dipped to 52.9 from the preliminary 53.3 number. Bit below consensus, but still ahead of the November 51 rating. Release also noted year-ahead inflation expectations dropped for the fourth consecutive month to 4.2%, the lowest reading in 11 months, but five-year expectations still remained at the 3.2% level. November existing home sales came in right at the 4.13 million mark, a bit better than October's upwardly revised 4.11 million. Looking ahead to next week, it is a holiday-shortened week. December 22nd is going to be fairly quiet in terms of data, though there will be some treasury auctioning. Other than that, though, I mean, there is a short day on Wednesday and obviously a closure on Thursday. All right, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this important story: de-dollarization, risks of the weaponized dollar. The main question is the dollar's global dominance ending? So we're going to break down the real risks of de-dollarization and how geopolitical sanctions could punish U.S. heavy portfolios. Also, we'll touch on the latest CPI report, which came out yesterday, and all the data issues when you dove deeper and how that might linger for quite some time. We'll also touch on how private funds that are suddenly trying to get liquidity becoming public, well, their valuations are slipping. Should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on how central banks globally are starting to signal that this rate cutting cycle is ending. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on monetizing the debt and another on Nike, ticker NKE, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. We're going into break. Still to come, my main focus point on de-dollarization and the risks that really all of us as U.S. investors may face, and hopefully, some live calls. Stay with me, and if you feel like talking, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
For the holidays, KPP Financial is excited to introduce a high-value, limited-time offer, the Holiday Estate Bundle. It's specifically designed to help new households quickly establish a solid foundation for their financial and personal legacies before the year ends. When you begin a financial relationship with KPP Financial and complete your onboarding by December 31st, 2025, you'll receive essential estate planning documents as an added benefit, and it's all powered by our trusted partner, Trust and Will. Learn more about the Holiday Estate Bundle now at investtalk.com, and while you're there, fill out a portfolio review to get started. And now the phone lines are open and waiting for your finance and investment questions. 888-99-CHART. The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
What are the risks of a weaponized dollar? Well, a quiet but very important shift is underway in global finance, and it starts with a simple data point. Foreign central banks are holding fewer U.S. bonds than they have in decades. And the decline has reignited concerns about whether global demand for dollar-denominated assets is slowly eroding. Now, the U.S. dollar still sits at the center of global trade reserves and capital markets, but its dominance is no longer taken for granted. For decades, the dollar's role as the world's reserve currency has been a pillar of American economic power, as well as financial stability. And this status traces back to the Bretton Woods system that coming out of the Second World War, when currencies were pegged to the dollar and the dollar was tied to gold. Now, even after the gold standard ended in the 1970s, the dollar retained its dominance. Why? Because stability, liquidity, and trust in U.S. institutions. Today, the dollar remains involved in roughly 88% of global foreign exchange transactions, an astonishing level of market penetration that you really can't see with any other currency. This dominance really gives the United States some meaningful advantages, including lower borrowing costs and the ability to sustain higher levels of national debt. It also makes imports cheaper for American consumers and supports purchasing power and living standards. Now, perhaps the most important dollar dominance, the most importantly, dollar dominance gives Washington extraordinary leverage through financial sanctions. Because dollar transactions clear through U.S. banks, the government can monitor, restrict, or even freeze access for sanctioned entities. And that power was on full display after Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, when sanctions disrupted the vast majority of Russia's foreign exchange activities. Now, unsurprisingly, that leverage has some countries uncomfortable with their reliance on the dollar. China, Russia, they've been leading efforts to reduce dollar exposure, settling more trade in renminbi, and building alternative payment systems. China, in particular, has tried to internationalize the renminbi by expanding bilateral trade agreements as well as financial infrastructure. Now, if these efforts were to gain traction, i.e. reduce global demand for dollars, well, it could push up borrowing costs for the U.S. government. A weaker dollar would also make servicing America's large debt load more expensive over time. That said, the shift away from the dollar has been gradual, not sudden, and it's not resulted in any major currency stepping in as a clear replacement. The dollar's share of global reserves has slipped from about 65% to roughly 57% over the past decade. But the euro, the yen, the pound, they've not meaningfully filled the gap. Instead, smaller allocations have flowed into non-traditional reserve currencies, including the Chinese renminbi. Even so, the renminbi faces major obstacles, including capital controls, limited transparency, and far smaller and less liquid bond markets than the United States. The U.S. Treasury market remains unmatched in not just size, but also depth and reliability, which is why global investors still return to it during times of crisis. Now, for individual investors wondering whether this trend means they should hold foreign currencies, the answer is usually about diversification, not abandonment of the dollar. Select exposure to developed markets or foreign bonds can reduce risk, but no alternative today offers the dollar's combination of liquidity, rule of law, and scale. Now, the decline in reserve share also does not mean U.S. sanctions are suddenly going to lose effectiveness. As long as the dollar remains central to global payments, banking, sanctions remain significant power for the United States. Where de-dollarization could matter more is the margins, gradually reducing how universally effective those tools are over time. If global investors were to meaningfully shift away from the dollar, U.S. assets most at risk would probably be long-duration bonds and sectors reliant on foreign capital flows. Higher interest rates would definitely pressure bond prices and potentially weigh on equity valuations that are tied to this cheap financing. For now, this is less about imminent regime change, right? We have seen this slowly move over time, and more about a slow warning signal. With that, renminbi replacement, right? You're seeing it constantly over time gain more and more share of global trade. But in recent years, it's actually not pulling that share from the dollar, but from other currencies. And so the dollar still dominates, but maintaining that dominance will and always has depended on policy stability, institutional trust, and most importantly, confidence in the U.S. financial system. On the next Invest Talk, we're going to dig into another exciting topic. It's going to be about active management's edge in fixed income. Passive bond funds, well, they are a bit broken. So we're going to expose why the current high yield, high volatility market is proving that active managers offer better risk mitigation and a measurable edge. That's Monday. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Weekend is here or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Happy holidays. Thanks again for taking my call. I just love your opinion on Nike, ticker NKE. You know, it's been on my watch list for quite a while, and I'm just wondering if it's kind of found a bottom down here in that low to mid 50 range, and if now's a good time to maybe start entering with a small position or maybe even start writing some puts on it. Just love your opinion, or is it just too much headwinds at the moment for Nike where it's more of a wait and see. Thanks again. I'll listen on the podcast.
Nike has had, well, it's had a rough time. 2022 was down 30%. 2023 was down 7%. 2024 was down 30%. And this year it's down 22.4%, as well as being down 10.54% today. Now, I'm sure everybody knows about what is one of the most widely known athletic apparel companies, right? Nike has been dominant in interlacing itself in most sports leagues. It is everywhere. But doesn't matter much if it doesn't translate to revenue. Revenue has fallen since 2024 because their fiscal year ends in May. So it's down from $51.3 billion to $46.4 billion in May 2025. Projected to stay relatively steady, but we want growth. At the same time, net margins, half of what they used to be. Net income, down from a peak of $6 billion in 2022, projected to only be $2.3 billion this upcoming year. So why is it down? Well, they recently had earnings, and they had to guide lower. Why? Because not only is U.S. demand sluggish, Chinese demand is sluggish as well, and that's a big part of their business. If you are looking at this, if you are looking at this chart, going back to 2021, abysmal, terrible. So, if you're asking, has it found a bottom? Or is it a wait and see? Definitely wait and see. That is NKE Nike Inc. Thanks for the call. I want to briefly mention the newest KPP premium newsletter, which will be distributed to all of our subscribers tomorrow. This week in the KPP Insights section, we did a it's a good idea for you to learn about NordProtect, an identity theft protection service you can trust. I've been looking into it, and I think you should too. NordProtect is built to help users safeguard their identity with advanced, automated features that work in the background 24/7, such as dark web monitoring, credit monitoring, and security alerts. NordProtect plans come with financial coverage across a wide range of threats, from identity theft to online fraud and scams, so their users are covered when it matters most. NordProtect is all-in-one identity theft protection that equips you with everything you need to keep your identity safe. NordProtect offers three types of plans: silver, gold, and platinum, so that every user can find the perfect fit for their budget. Getting started is simple. You just buy your plan and complete a quick setup. NordProtect comes with identity theft recovery and cyber extortion protection for your peace of mind. Get an exclusive 5% off on NordProtect plans. Go to nordprotect.com/investtalk and use the code investtalk at checkout. You can also find the link in the episode description. NordProtect.com/investtalk and use code investtalk. Discussion and update after the recent inflation numbers, what it all means for the market, and what it means heading into 2026. In the stock ideas section, we mentioned a content delivery network, as well as a manufacturing company. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on avoiding behavioral traps for the average investor. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and hit subscribe. The newsletter will hit your inbox on Saturday afternoons. Looks like we have a fresh YouTube question, so why don't we tackle that right now? And it is on ticker FPI. Ticker FPI, which is Farmland Partners, Inc. It says, what are your thoughts on FPI, a real estate investment trust that holds row crop farmland, so think corn, soybeans, wheat, cotton, etc., in the United States as a tangible asset with shrinking supply? Tariffs are hanging on the sector, but that could lead to more opportunities for these folks to buy land in the short run. Well, it is a real estate investment trust, which tends to be invested in for exposure to real estates, an asset class that tends to move differently from equities, but also for consistent dividends, right? That's one of the reasons why people invest in REITs as income. So as you'd expect, as rates have fallen, other investments that are producing income are going to be where income-seeking investors put their money. That has not been the case for this name. This name was down 5.8% last year, underperforming the S&P by 29 and its industry by 6.5. It's down 14.6% this year, underperforming by 30. The S&P underperforming its industry by about 12. And so the reason why, the question is why, right? The dividend has shown a bit of growth over time, but yields have been a bit low compared to their peers. There also are a bit of risks here. Farmland rents and values decline if crop prices fall. They are also a pretty small name as well, right? It's a $456 million market cap name that's sitting on $170 million in debt. This industry is broadly supported by debt. And at a time where the cost of debt has been high for quite some time, that's where you start to see a lot of heightened volatility. So, you know, I like your idea here. Certainly the farmers are in a bit of a position, right? We've seen that with how the government now wants to effectively send them bailout money from the frictions caused by the tariffs in the first place. But given the macro headwinds, given that this is a very, very small company, I think the risks here are just outsized. And for that reason, I wouldn't buy Farmland Partners, ticker FPI. Thanks for watching. Why don't we talk a little bit about CPI? The reason being that economists are cautioning that November's sharp drop in inflation may be more about bad data than real economic relief. The Labor Department released the report after a prolonged government shutdown that effectively prevented staff from collecting prices the way they normally do. With no CPI report at all for October, many analysts believe November's figures likely understated actual price increases. Those disruptions may also linger for months. It makes it harder for markets and policymakers to assess inflation during a period of major policy shifts on trade, on immigration, and on fiscal spending. The problems also highlight deeper strain at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which has faced staffing shortages, leadership turmoil, and really, frankly, underinvested resource management, or rather resource allocation, for well over a decade. One lasting consequence is a bit technical. Without October data, the Bureau of Labor Statistics may not be able to calculate a year-over-year inflation rate for October 2026. And the issues with the data may persist into next year's calculations as well. Now, diving in, right, housing was the biggest concern, since it makes up roughly one third of the consumer price index and relies on staggered data collection. Because the BLS surveys only about one sixth of rents each month, a single missed data point can distort housing inflation for up to the next 6 months. In order to fill the gap, the agency appeared to have assumed zero rent inflation for October, a placeholder that economists say will skew future readings until enough data rolls in. Other distortions stem from delayed price checks in November, which may have overstated the impact of Black Friday discounts. Now, some categories like gasoline and cars, those are going to be less affected because their prices come from external data sources rather than in-person surveys. But overall, for good reason, economists are warning that inflation data will carry a large margin of uncertainty well into the next year, complicating Fed decisions and leaving investors such as yourselves flying with an imperfect instrument. Let's keep things rolling and answer another caller question now.
Hi, I'm calling from San Bernardino, California. I'm wondering what it means to monetize the debt, and is that something I can use? Thank you.
Okie doke. What does monetizing the debt mean? Because I think that's something that we have mentioned on this show often, right? Government monetizes its debt when it finances it by having its central bank essentially create money to buy government bonds, effectively turning debt into newly created money. What it can do over time is it can keep interest rates lower, it can make funding a bit easier, but overuse risks two things: inflation, as well as currency weakness. Now, can you monetize your debt? Well, if you are issuing debt and printing money, then you're probably breaking the law. You're definitely breaking the law. So the answer is no. Only governments with a central bank like the US Treasury, Federal Reserve, can monetize their debt. So if you find yourself in a position where debt is becoming a burden, think less about monetization, which you can't do, and think more about managing it smartly, which you should. This is Invest Talk, now with more than 62 million downloads, and we're going to tackle more of your questions in 30 seconds, so hang on. Hello, investors. Lou Guerrero here with a quick heads up and an invite. This year, we're doing something brand new. The first ever Invest Talk Holiday Special. And it drops December 18th exclusively on our YouTube channel. It's going to be a fun end-of-year episode where we look back at the biggest market themes of 2025, highlight a few lessons we're carrying into 2026, and choose the caller question of the year, plus a couple surprises you won't get in our regular format. To watch the Invest Talk Holiday Special, head over to YouTube and search Invest Talk with two T's, or use the link in today's show notes. And while you're there, subscribe and hit the bell so you don't miss it on December 18th.
This is Jim in Miami. Just want to thank you guys very much for all the insight you provide on the show. It's really helpful. I have a question today about Equinor, EQNR, trying to get into the energy market. You guys are really good at finding the turd in the punch bowl. So if you could please tell me what I'm missing here in this stock, I'll listen on the show. Thank you so much for your help. Bye-bye.
So I had to laugh a bit with the turd in the punch bowl. That is a very funny way of phrasing it. So Equinor, ticker EQNR, is an integrated energy company out of Canada. Now, what they do is they explore, they produce, they transport, they refine, and they market petroleum and petroleum-derived products. Now, it's a $2.5 billion market cap. $57 billion market cap name. Sometimes it's difficult to read line by line. And revenue growth has been stellar, right? Up 11.1% on an annualized basis, going back to 2019. The same time, net income up 36.6%. Going back to 2019 as well. Margins, pretty decent, 38.3% EBITDA margin. Return on equity was 19.3% last year, sitting at 15.9% this year. And, you know, one thing that's also one thing that is good as well is its valuation, sitting at 8.3 times price to forward-looking earnings, price to book value 1.4 times. Now, what has really been driving a lot of the price movement here is, well, energy market cyclicality, production and exploration has been pretty successful for this company. They also have implemented a multi-billion dollar share buyback program in 2025, which is ongoing. And, you know, they also have a renewable energy and low carbon project segment, which has a lot of investment globally, right? They are a diversified company. About 72% of the revenue comes from Norway, so you get exposure outside of the United States. 22% of its revenue comes from the United States. Free cash flow, $8.356 billion. Net operating cash flow was $20 billion last year. So this is a cash cow of a business here that has been on a bit of a downtrend, but has been consolidating well for the better part of the past 3 months. So it gives you some sort of regional diversity here, which is certainly something we like. And it has fared pretty well year to date compared to a lot of other energy companies. So I like Equinor. I think at these prices, maybe a good time to add. That is EQNR. Thanks for the call. Looks like we got plenty of time. Let's keep things moving with another caller question.
Hey, Justin and Luke, I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time. It's RMBS, Rambus Inc. I see good support coming closer around the $56, $58. I would really like your thoughts on this company, and thank you so much for all your help. Appreciate it.
RMBS is Rambus Inc. It is a semiconductor technology company that designs and licenses interface, memory, security, and high-speed logic technologies. It's up 82.36% year-to-date, but down 5.82% over the past 3 months, as we've seen a bit of a rotation out of these semiconductor names. But over the past year, in spite of that, it's still up nearly 80%. Revenue growth up 20% on an annualized basis. Now, it is a mid-cap company, about $10 billion market cap with pretty much no debt, $24.5 million, not billion with a B, but million dollars in debt. Its margins, as you see with a lot of semiconductor companies, great. Net margin, 38.7% is what it's projected to be at the end of this year, which ends in December. EBITDA margin, 52.5%. Return on equity, 19.6%. Now, it does look a bit expensive here, right? It has had this big run-up because of this strong demand for high-performance memory interfaces. And so at one point, it was trading at 40 times price to forward-looking earnings, 10 times price to book value. Now it's around 30 and 7.6 respectively. So it's coming down a bit. But price has been consolidating for a couple months now. It's up 5.36% today, which is certainly good. But, you know, you're starting to see this rotation. And a lot of these semi-names, I'd be probably hesitant to buy in until the new year. So for now, I would keep this on my watch list. That is Rambus Inc., ticker RMBS. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
For the holidays, KPP Financial is excited to introduce the Holiday Estate Bundle. When you begin a financial relationship with KPP Financial and complete your onboarding by December 31st, 2025, you'll receive essential estate planning documents as an added benefit, and it's all powered by our trusted partner, Trust and Will. Learn more about the Holiday Estate Bundle now at investtalk.com. And while you're there, fill out a portfolio review to get started. And now the phone lines are open and waiting for your finance and investment questions. 888-99-CHART.
The holidays are not just a time for savings, as we have offered with the Holiday Estate Bundle, but also a time for reflection. And so we here at InvestTalk decided to do something brand spanking new. And it was released, or at least part of it was released, yesterday over there on our YouTube channel. Search InvestTalk with two T's. And in this holiday special, well, Justin and I get a little silly, right? We dress in a way that you may not normally see us dress. We explain our clothes. You get to see my special Christmas shoes that I get to wear every year and only around Christmas. But most importantly, we talk about what we got right, what we got wrong, and what we expect in the new year. Because just as it is good for everybody to reflect on 2025 themselves, we thought we'd give you a bit of a show as well. So if you're interested, go check that out. Again, on our YouTube channel, just search Invest Talk with two T's. Anyway, our last story today is about how investors are getting a bit of a harsh reality check on private asset funds and how their NAV, which stands for net asset value, may not actually be their actual value. Several formerly non-traded funds have tried to list on stock exchanges and their prices immediately plunged, suggesting that stable valuations inside private portfolios may not hold up once real buyers set the price. The core tension is simple. You can have smooth, infrequently marked prices in illiquid assets, or you can have daily liquidity. But these recent lease listings are showing you cannot reliably have both at once. The biggest example is BlueRock's real estate portfolio, which began trading on the New York Stock Exchange with a stated NAV of $24.36, but closed at $14.70, nearly a 40% discount in a single day. A similar shock hit FS Specialty Lending, which listed with an $18.67 NAV and finished the first day at $14, 25% lower. Again, signaling public markets do not agree with the fund's internal marks. And so other firms, well, they're hesitating. After watching these massive first day discounts, Priority Income Fund delayed a shareholder meeting tied to a potential listing, while Blue Owl previously scrapped a plan to move a private fund into a listed vehicle trading at a steep discount. What makes this so jarring is how these products were sold. Right? Non-traded structures promised limited redemption windows and an escape from public market volatility, while charging fees that were often 1.5% or more. The old setup also benefited managers. Lockups made it easier to use leverage, to hold long-duration assets, and to avoid forced selling until investors started asking for more liquidity when returns softened. Now, BlueRock CEO argues the discount reflects a temporary supply-demand imbalance because investors who once could only redeem a slice each quarter can now sell everything instantly at whatever price the market will bear. The problem is that market price converges to NAV is not guaranteed. And the entire episode highlights how subjective price valuations can be when there's no daily trading to validate them. To be fair, many newly listed vehicles holding unusual or leveraged assets often trade below NAV, reflecting uncertainty, frictional costs, and skepticism about the marks. But the scale of these gaps is still a very loud signal. The broader takeaway for you is that liquidity events can expose hidden valuation risk. When private funds finally meet public pricing and scrutiny, the discount can reveal that apparent stability was partly an illusion created by infrequent manager-driven appraisals. Well, that concludes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. You can get those at iTunes and Spotify. And while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. As always, if today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, whether you're prepared for retirement, and really if it's all working together in the best way possible. At KPP, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring a little bit of clarity and confidence to your daily life. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. It is a free and confidential service. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.